Before we get into this episode, I just want to talk with you guys, the audience, about some news. Because if you don't follow me on social media and you don't go to Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning every day, you might not know, but I'm actually going to be departing Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning and Certified Functional Strength Coach in March. Early March is when I'm going to be departing. And I just want to talk because, you know, with the world of the internet today and gossiping and stuff like that, people are making some assumptions that I just want to clear up. Because first off, it could not be a better, more positive departure from Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning and the CFSC. I've been at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning for about 7.5 years coming up on March when I do leave. And I'm incredibly proud of what we've built out of there, not just in terms of how things have changed at MBSC and the facility itself, but also the things that, you know, I've gotten the opportunity to lead with projects like Body by Boyle Online, partner up with them on MBSC Thrive and work on some of that stuff. And of course, being a significant part of Certified Functional Strength Coach, as you guys all know, if you see me at Boost or you talk to me through email or you see me coaching at events and putting together a lot of the material for that. So I just want to make it incredibly clear that I have such a love for Mike Boyle and the staff at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, from all the way to the top at Mike Boyle and Bob Hansen, all the way to the interns that are starting here this winter. I've been incredibly fortunate to work at such a place and to have opportunities that I've had over the last couple of years. And it just felt like the right time to go see what other opportunities are out there. And to, I think it's probably always a really good thing to never get too comfortable wherever you're at. And also, there's the factor that I believe they have the best staff in the world there. And I'm incredibly confident that people there are going to be able to, pick up the ball and run with it from the things that I've worked on. And I'll still be working for them a little bit on the side on a couple projects and whenever my services are needed. But this is going to give me the opportunity to do two main things. One is, I'm partially betting on myself and betting on the Fitcast and the podcast that I run, because I believe they have incredible value. The Fitcast is coming up on 11 years in April, guys. That's nuts. And this is episode 420. Like, that's a lot of shows. And with that, I'm back in my play. Part of this is betting on myself and, what I would like to do in terms of delivering for the audience out there. So going forward, really most of my income is just going to be from the Fitcast. And, I'm going to do some little side things for people, but it's mostly going to be from Patreon support and PayPal donations from the audience. And same thing with Back My Play, and the other podcasts are going to be ramping back up and working on some video content and all that. But primarily it's going to be from the podcasts. So my hope is that the audience will have even more of a reason, if they haven't in the past, to say you value this show, you value this content, heading to patreon.com/thefitcast or going to fitcast.network and clicking on that PayPal tab and setting up a monthly contribution or making a one-time donation. Basically voting with your dollar, saying like, yeah, I really do believe in this stuff. And I've talked with you guys in the past, like, this is a business now. Like, the Fitcast Network is an LLC. Like, this is something that I'm trying to build into a successful business. And, it forces me to look at other options, whether it be putting together some exclusive content for people that are supporters, like I've played with in the past, and also doing timed releases for people that are supporters. But I believe in a world in terms of this podcast where, the people that do have the position to do so and the ability to do so, and believe in this stuff to contribute through Patreon or PayPal, because, there's going to be some people that tune in that don't have the financial capabilities to do it. They could be, students at college. They could be paying off student loans. They could be in other situations that might not be as fortunate as others. So that is my hope. And I do have some plans for some additional content going forward, but my plan right now is to make that free for everyone. Lots of great stuff in terms of putting together programs and home training stuff that you guys have kind of known me for on Instagram and things like that. But that is my hope. So again, I just wanted to quickly just clear the air. If people think there's any other reason that I'm leaving Mike Boyle's strength and conditioning in the CFSC, again, it's incredibly positive. The best way I can put it is it feels like the right time. They got an incredible group of people to carry the torch that I've done there in the past, and I can't wait to see what they do next, because that's the cool thing of being on the sidelines, is seeing, all right, we've gone this far, where can they go next? And I'm really excited to see what they do. And of course, Mike Boyle strength and conditioning, there's a reason why it's the number one gym in America, you know, from the programming to the staff. It's just so great. And what I'm going to miss the most is coaching. I love coaching those middle school groups, and that's going to be a sad day when I step outside those doors. But again, you walk through one door and you go into a world of opportunities and possibilities, I hope. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk with you guys for a couple minutes before we get into the podcast this week. And again, I hope you do believe in what I'm trying to do with this podcast, and we do make it successful financially, so I can continue to add on to what the FitCast network brings to you through your phone, your computer, and so on and so forth. So thank you so much again for everything, for everyone that is a Patreon supporter. We got about 200 people on Patreon right now. And again, for people that do make those one-time or monthly PayPal donations, you guys, it means more now than ever. So thank you so much, and let's get into the show. Coming up on the FitCast, I got Krista Scott Dixon back from Precision Nutrition to talk about changing client negative self-talk, coaching empathy, also helping people determine their goals, working with people that say they have, quote, no time for nutrition or training, and also figuring out how to best talk with habit-based diet non-believers. That and much more is coming up right now on the FitCast. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and back on the show, I got Krista Scott Dixon of Precision Nutrition. Krista, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, and it's weird to talk to you because it's like we still talk regularly every week or every other week, because you've been coaching me for like, what, 6 or 7 or 8 months now or something like that?
Yeah, it might even be 8 months.
it's been outstanding, because I think it's been a good learning process for me in terms of, you know, how you can approach things as a coach, in terms of support, in terms of the right questions to ask, and you know what coaching really is. But we'll get into that in a little bit. We got some great questions from the audience as well. But again, this is going to be somewhat of a weird episode, because again, it's like we've been talking so much over the last couple months about so many different things. But I think maybe the best place to start is to selfishly talk about something that I'm really curious about, and something that I've been doing a lot of reading on over the last couple of weeks, in the sense of being a coach, someone that is being hired to help people get to reach their goals, and to do our best as coaches to understand where the people we are coaching are coming from. And if you don't mind me setting the stage for a second, it's not always the case, but we have a lot of awesome coaches in this industry that have always been in like really good shape, right? They've always like found that athletics came naturally to them, and you know, strength training came naturally to them, fitness came naturally to them. We have a lot of amazing coaches that found fitness due to wanting to make a positive change in their lives, whether it be losing body fat, or just getting stronger, getting jacked. Like, we all went through the bodybuilding phases of our strength training progression. But I guess my question to you, and the question that I'm kind of posing to myself as I put together some stuff for a talk, is the idea of empathy for coaches out there, and like almost trying to do our best to dial in the right amount to be understanding, but also to like, what is that fine line of being understanding, trying to do our best to put ourselves in the shoes and the position of the people that we're trying to help, especially if we haven't been where they are at currently, or where they were at before they even came to see you. but how we can best utilize empathy for helping the people that are coming to us as fitness professionals, or even for people that are just listening and need to almost give themselves a break.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot embedded in your questions there, so I'll try to take it piece by piece and you let me know if I have missed anything. But I feel like what I would want people to understand, first of all, is that yes, we are all born with different levels of natural empathy. Like some people just came out of the womb as satellite dishes for every signal that the world is putting out, right? Mm. And then some people came out as like just complete sociopaths. So I think most of us are somewhere in between. So we have a natural baseline of empathy that's kind of intrinsic to us, but it's also a skill that we can build. And so if you start at, let's say, 10% empathy, maybe you'll never be 90%, and maybe that's good, but maybe you can move the needle to 20% or 30%. So it's both an aptitude and a skill. And mm-hmm. it's important, I think, to tell people that, because I think we sometimes assume that a lot of those, what people might call soft skills in coaching, like sometimes people think of them as more like personality traits. So I'd argue that empathy is definitely something you can build. It's something you can practice. It's something you can work on and get better at. And it's not just useful in coaching, it's useful for life, right? I mean, if you get really good at it, it's almost like being a mind reader. You can understand people and what they're thinking and feeling and what their anxieties are and what they might do next and all this kind of stuff. So I think there's lots of arguments in favor of building your empathy, whatever domain you work in, or you know, whatever domain of life you're currently interested in improving. And you kind of got at this idea of like, what's the right amount? And I think a lot of that depends on the kind of coaching you're doing. So I think that you need to have enough to understand people intuitively and not just technically, not just as machines, not just as objects to move around, right? So you need to have some kind of feel for people that is intuitive, that is instinctive, because that's where the wisdom lies, right? Like you can be a very good technical coach, but there's that intangible gut feeling, intuitive dimension to coaching that really the most experienced and best coaches all have, I would say. And empathy helps you build it. So you need enough empathy to be able to create that dimension of your coaching, but not so much that you are overwhelmed by your client's feelings all the time.
Right.
And if you are that kind of person that's naturally a high empathy person, your job is less about building empathy and more about building boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding when to feel, when not to feel, how to turn it off, how to turn it on, and when to use it properly. And there's different levels of empathy. So maybe you're someone who is working with people who are very vulnerable, right? Maybe teenagers, right? Mm-hmm. Who, despite their bravado, are actually rather delicate emotionally and vulnerable. Absolutely. And full of feelings and so forth. Or maybe you're dealing with people who have disordered eating or who are recovering from injuries, right? So there's that extra level of like distress and pain and vulnerability that benefits from more empathy. Then maybe you are a coach in a really kind of hard-ass domain, like you train military or you train, you know, elite teams of some kind. Maybe your empathy doesn't need to be quite as high, or maybe you can use it in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So there is kind of like some negotiation in terms of like what's the optimal amount. But I would say it lies in the zone between instinctive intuition and not being overwhelmed by stuff.
And this is, it's always great to put this stuff in context based on like the populations that we're going to be trying to help. And, you know, I can almost anticipate some of the reaction from the audience from even hearing this discussion. Like, we're not necessarily talking about letting like clients get away with everything. And that's like even probably the worst way to put it, but it's not talking about saying like, oh, you know, like if you slipped up on, you know, some goals or some eating habit type stuff over the week, it's like, oh, it's no problem. I understand you're just having a rough week. I don't know if that's necessarily what we're talking about, right?
No, I don't think so. I think that I would describe empathy as something more like an intuitive understanding of other people that lives in a domain that is not cognitive, that is more of a felt sense about other people. And so you can use it any way you like, for your example about letting people get away with stuff. Well, if I have empathy towards you and I understand where you're coming from and I have a sense of what you're thinking and feeling, maybe that's the moment when I choose to call you on your crap. You know what totally. I mean? Because I have sensed into the fact that you're somehow being either deceptive or in denial, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So I think there's this idea that empathy is like this touchy feely, anything goes, laissez-faire thing. And it's not like that at all. It's a way of understanding and knowing and connecting with people, but mm-hmm. you can do lots of different things with it.
And another thing that was part of this, and this is almost like brainstorming this 20-minute talk that I'm going to give, but this was like almost a hot trend when maybe it was almost like 10 years ago, but I remember when I started like doing this show, I remember a lot of fitness professionals, personal trainers, and coaches, a lot of people prided themselves on their willingness to fire clients. Mm-hmm. when their clients, for one reason or another, were not following, they weren't following the food list that they were giving them to continue to do the other, whatever it was, 71 hours outside of the gym before they saw them the next time. But that seems to be at least a lessening trend or a declining trend, because of course, if you look at the flip side, right, this would be more of a failure on the coach's part, not on the client's part.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there are times when you and the client have to part ways, but for different reasons, right? And it should rarely get to that point where you've set yourself up as a rule creator and B, that the relationship has become so fractured that you can't negotiate any way out of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's definitely a failure of empathy for sure. And it's also a failure of coaching, because it's meant that isn't coaching about getting people to do stuff or like facilitating the process of execution? Mm-hmm. And so if you're not able to facilitate the process of execution for someone, that is not a failure of coaching, that's too strong a word, but it makes you question what your role in that process is.
Yeah, I think we've all, I mean, if you've been doing this, whether you're like a personal trainer or you're another kind of coach in this industry, I think we've all experienced, failure would probably be a good word, a failure on our part as coaches, or maybe it's a combination of just like the relationship between you and the person that you're trying to help, whether they're incredibly difficult, even combative with the, programming that you're giving them, to the point where they're saying like, I'm not going to do that, or I'm not going to even kind of meet you halfway and make some kind of compromise there. Maybe that's the kind of situation where, yeah, like maybe our personalities just don't mesh up, and like, perhaps there's another coach out there that you're better suited for.
Mm-hmm. And what you're saying too, I think, raises another point, which is that we're not just talking about a knowledge of clients, like an intuitive wisdom about clients. We're talking about empathy for ourselves too, like knowing what we are feeling and thinking and processing inside us. Because I think that I see a lot of coaches who seem oblivious to these processes that are happening inside them, right? So what if you get a client that spins your dials and, pushes all your buttons and not even necessarily because they're doing something that is quote unquote bad, like they're not mm-hmm. being an asshole or something, but what if they are acting in a way that frustrates you because of your internal programming? Mm-hmm. You have to have the empathy for yourself to see what is happening, to be able to step back and go, oh, they're bugging me because X, Y, and Z. And that's not objectively wrong. It's how we relate together. So empathy for the client is also empathy for yourself. And that's a key process too.
Yeah. And I don't know why this is, it's such a hard, almost a hard discussion to have, because it's hard to almost not generalize, especially when you don't know the audience that you're talking to. Like, I don't know who's downloading this episode. I don't have a demographic breakdown of who's going to be tuning in. So it's hard to even shape this discussion. But I guess one of the worries that I have is almost making sure that, what's the best way to put this? That, people don't look at empathy as a lack of strength or as a weakness as a coach, because I think there's almost, I don't know how to best put this together without sounding like I'm just putting everyone in a bucket. But maybe that's just a good place to kind of put a period, and we can move on, because I think this is a discussion that we'll be continued to have. But I don't know. Do you have any final thoughts? Because I think the only other thing that I was really thinking of for this talk is making sure that, you know, as coaches, we at least have a mindset, or we can at least acknowledge that we need to potentially always strive to do a better job at understanding where the people that are coming to us for help are coming from, and to understand, you know, why they would go into the weekend, have a, you know, potentially a rough Friday, and then overeat on a Saturday. You know, what can we do a better job of understanding that, and just saying like, man, like they're just not following the program that I'm giving them. I told them exactly. I even gave them like three options on how to potentially not fall into the, you know, the overeating trap or whatever for that Saturday, which we've been trying to work on.
Yeah. And I think too, you're getting at something important, which is that this is not just about like being touchy feely. I mean, if you want to get really pragmatic about it, the more you understand your clients, the better your results will be.
Right.
So empathy is, in a sense, a business skill. It is one of the key skills that will get you results, because if your clients cannot follow your plan, you don't have any results. So the better you can get into their head and their heart and understand what's going on for them, the more you will be able to tailor strategies that actually do work for them. And I feel like sometimes the discussion gets framed as, are you empathetic or are you structured? And I think that's a false dichotomy. I think that as coaches, ideally we have all the tools in our toolbox, whether that's technical knowledge, verbal cueing skill, empathy, any of that stuff, business skills. Like, there's a ton of things that make you a good coach. And really, it's about having a very robust toolbox, knowing when to use things, having good variety, being adaptable. So I don't see empathy as like in opposition to any other coaching skill. And you can coach according to your own style while still remaining empathetic.
Right. I think that's something that I took away from, you know, working with you a lot, and something that I put into this talk that I've been giving out at a couple gyms is, like, potentially, like, what will really separate the good from the great coaches over the next, you know, couple of years, or maybe the next decade, is adaptability. It's the ability to, you know, work with, you know, someone that is coming to you just for rather simple needs, like needing to drop 10 pounds because they had a really crazy couple months at work and they just wanted to get back into shape, or get back into a pattern of good fitness, versus someone that has been dealing with obesity for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, ever since they were a child, and kind of looking at some of those, like, that one of the coolest things that I read when I was doing like research and trying to educate myself on empathy, and like the research that psychologists have been doing, is like looking at the patterns of, and I can't remember if you and I talked about this previously, but like looking at the patterns of people that have issues with controlling their eating habits, and seeing how a large portion of those, a large percentage of people that do have challenges with that, it goes all the way back to their childhood and goes back to potentially issues that they had growing up, or, you know, harassment in middle school and stuff like that. And that obviously rang true for me, because that's like what I dealt with. So I don't know if it's like a confirmation bias thing, but it was fascinating nonetheless.
Well, I like to think of it as being curious about how people got here.
Exactly.
Like, we have today, we can know today, we can look at all the factors of today, but how did you end up here? What was the path that you took to get here? And like, especially when we're dealing with things like obesity, like, no one just accidentally ends up 400 pounds. Like, there were a lot of choices to get there. And so, like, I think we sometimes, I don't know, we seem to forget that, right? We seem to sometimes forget about being curious about the path that somebody took, which is really fundamental to understanding how to get them out of it.
Okay, so I took up that was my 10, 15 minutes selfishly, and now we will move on to questions from the audience, because I will be remiss if we don't do a couple of those. And you guys stepped up some great questions on Facebook from people. So we'll start jumping into those. And this first one comes from super generous Mark Davison, who's a Patreon supporter of the show. Not that Patreon supporters get priority for asking questions, but he was just at the top of the list of stuff to ask. He asked, what strategies can you employ with someone who constantly hurts their progress with poor choices? And the answer is always because they have, quote, no time.
Yeah, well, there's sort of a couple of, I mean, there's lots of pieces there, but I guess sort of step back and understand the question. I would want to introduce this concept of what I would call competing commitments. That's not my term, it's someone else's, but it's the idea that we have more than one thing competing for our attention, our interest, our time, our energy. And so very rarely do we have the ability to fully focus on one thing. Actually, when I was in China recently, it was pretty cool to see the athletes because they have nothing else to do. If you compete for China, you have nothing else to do except train and recover. Like everything's taken care of for your food, your travel, you know, people to rub your feet. I don't know, whatever. So you literally have nothing else to do but be an athlete. And so very rarely in life does that actually occur, right? Most of us have competing commitments. We have jobs, we have school, we have kids, we have older people we're taking care of, whatever. We have other things in our life. So I think the basic stance for a coach, unless you're coaching the Chinese athletes, is to say, very likely my clients are going to have competing commitments. So that's the baseline expectation that I have to have. And then I have to consider that some of the competing commitments may not be things like work and family, but things like helping myself cope with stress, helping myself alleviate pain, helping myself not feel distress for a little while. Because ultimately, that's the root of a lot of the behaviors that we see. We're like, why the hell did this person go drinking? Or why are they eating this junk food on Friday night? God damn it. But, you know, ultimately, if we understand this as an attempt to alleviate pain, like, oh, this person had a terrible week. This bag of chips is their only friend right now. It's going to create some nice brain chemicals, take away the pain for a little while. And that makes total sense. So I always like to start with the idea that whatever people are doing makes sense in some way. Now, it may be a dumb idea. You know, it may not be a great coping mechanism. It may be maladaptive. It may be damaging. But it has some kind of internal logic. So I always get curious about what is the internal logic here? Like how does the behavior think that it is solving the problem? So that's for me sort of the first, that's how I show up to that mentally. And then the idea of not enough time, I think that's a shorthand for this kind of stuff around prioritization. I think that people genuinely in North America in 2017 feel quite rightly like they don't have time. If you think about work demands, commuting, all the other things that are on our plate,
Netflix.
I think feeling time pressured is legit, right?
Right.
But not always correct. It's really often our perception rather than reality. So like rather than feeling stressed because we don't have time, we tend to feel like we don't have time because we are stressed. It's the other way around, which is sort of interesting. So stress changes our perception of time. So whenever I have a client, I think who doesn't have time, I think, A, what is their perception of time? Is it actually correct, first of all? And B, is I don't have time a shorthand for something else? So my question there is, okay, if you don't have time, where else are you spending your time? And that's an interesting question all of itself. I sometimes will get clients to do a time diary and it blows their mind. They're like, oh my God, I spent 20 hours a week on Facebook. I had no idea.
Jeez, yeah.
And like typically we don't just find a couple of hours. We find a part-time job in there somewhere, like 15 to 20 hours or 30 hours, I don't know, of wasted time, just TV, Facebook, just crap, right? Nothing that they have to be doing, not like spending time with their partner or anything like that. So I like to get curious, and I feel like curiosity should be your basic stance as a coach. Because in this question about like, why are my clients doing dumb stuff, there's an implied judgment. Like they should be doing the stuff that I want them to do. Why are they not doing that stuff? I feel that's wrong. Well, it's really more a question of what makes sense for that person. So to kind of bring it back to a coaching strategy, I think a time diary for a client that says they don't have time is a great first step. It may also be a skill deficit. Maybe the person has time, but is really not good at planning, preparation, self-organization. Like literally, there are some of our clients who don't really know how to use calendars and reminders, right? Like, is there a fundamental skill deficit in any of the skills that would help them organize themselves more proactively? I always like to look for skill deficits when in doubt. So I don't look for personality deficits. I look for skill deficits and I look for priority deficits. Those are my go-tos. And then I start gathering some data. So where are they spending their time? If they're not spending time here, where else are they spending it? So that's how I would start to explore that.
Yeah, it's well, and it's also, I think you brought it up a couple times, but it's priorities, right? Because they're, you know, they might have to watch the latest episode of their favorite TV show tonight. But, you know, that hour could also have been used for, you know, doing their training or going to the gym. But it's, do you find that it just is like the biggest kind of weapon in this is just helping them realize where they are spending their time elsewhere?
That's a huge one. I mean, it really is. Most of the time, it just blows people's minds how much time they're wasting. Because our perception of time is so subjective, we really don't have an accurate understanding of where our time is going. That's just a human thing, right? Like we're really bad at accurately perceiving most things. And so whether that's time, whether that's how much they're eating, like there's all kinds of things that we're really bad at judging for ourselves. And that's where the coach comes in as well. The coach can be this kind of curious data collector, like, oh, okay, that's interesting that you're making that assessment. That's a hypothesis which we can test. And so let's gather some data, which also helps you as the client learn more about yourself. And then we'll analyze the data and come to some conclusions. And so that's also much more powerful than the coach saying, well, you suck for not making time. Mm-hmm. Well, like that's just wasted effort, right? And then the client feels like crap, right? Whereas if the client themselves collects the data and then sits down with the coach and analyzes it together, and the client can say, wow, here's what I see about myself. And the coach says, oh, that's interesting. What do you make of that? And where do you think we could go with that? Then the client begins to generate the solutions, right? The client starts to say, oh God, instead of wasting 3 hours on Facebook every night, you know what? I'll just take my dog for a walk. And now the client has bought into the solution. The coach, in a sense, didn't have to tell them anything.
So it's inception.
Yeah. That's where the empathy comes in. You're in people's heads.
Man. All right. Well, that's, that's a movie you could watch. All right. So we got some other good questions. This is a particularly interesting one from Jimmy Hunter. People who seek solace from other, quote, diets who discount the benefits of a habit-based system. How do we win them over? So I'm guessing that's, you know, for people that are kind of, they want like the something diet, they want like the 30-day whatever. Instead, how do we convince them that that's not going to be the long-term success? It's going to be really, you know, habit-based system.
Yeah, I don't convince. I don't win people over. Like that's most of the time wasted effort, because even if you convince them, they haven't convinced themselves. So any convincing you do will only be a partial victory. I like to think of it in a different way, which is to say, here's what's available to you. Here is one option that is available to you, and allow me to explain it to you and how it works and why it works the way that it does in a very non-judgy way, but like just giving you information, right? Like, let me help you understand this in a way that makes sense to you. And then you decide when you are ready, willing, and able to do something different, whether this is something that would fit you. And that's it. So, you know, if someone comes to me and they're like, ah, dude, I'm going to go on this awesome juice fast. I'm going to be like, great, have fun. Take some notes, right? I always say take notes to clients that are about to do something crazy, right? Take notes, stay checked in, keep a journal, record some data, see how it goes. Because then they'll be the ones saying, oh my God, I fainted after 3 days because my electrolytes were so out of whack, whatever, whatever. So I don't convince people. And I think a lot of coaches sometimes feel like they have to convert people. I think all that we can do is help people understand what we do, which you know, really gets at meaning, like, you know, meaningful communication, having a relationship with someone so that you can make sense to them and they can make sense to you, helping them understand what is available to them, and then letting them decide, right? And always keeping that door open. I always say, like, keep the door open and the porch light on, right? Like, you're always welcome. But understanding that it takes people time, like, why would people buy into habit-based coaching when the only thing that they know is diets and cleanses and infomercials? Like, why the hell would they suddenly do a 180 and buy into habit-based coaching? That makes no sense. So we really have to think about progressing people towards this by a place to land that they know is there, and they can have a sense of.
Chris, you still there?
Yep, I'm here. Did I cut out?
You did. You cut out for 2 seconds, but I think we're still good. We're still going to roll. The internet is alive. Let's jump into another question from Jameson Skillings. That's a cool name. Krista, what are your go-to strategies to change a client's negative self-talk? Has motivational interviewing been most successful for you?
Yeah, it's funny. Again, I feel like we keep circling on this theme of, like, how do you convince clients to change?
Right? Well, that's it. It's like, what? Well, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, this is the thing, like, you and I have talked about this a bunch, but it's like, we kind of know, like, we know what people should be doing. We know what we should be doing for, you know, more or less for nutrition and for training, but it's all about, like, helping to, I guess we shouldn't be using the word convince, but it's almost how do we make the testimony that, yeah, this is what you should be doing. Now, just hopefully you'll understand that and follow it, I hope.
Yeah, exactly. So I take a different tack on this one. First of all, I always assume that every problem has a reason to be there. So if a client is self-critical, there's some thing that self-criticism is doing for them. Now, again, it may be maladaptive, it may be dysfunctional, it may not actually be useful, but the self-criticism thinks it's doing a good job. So that's kind of perspective number one. And then I actually like to gather the data, like, what is the client saying to themselves? And so I will invite the client to tell me. And I call this, I'm very careful to distance self-talk from the person. So I'll say something like, well, what is your resistance voice saying? Or what is the script that the resistance voice is saying to you, right? So I kind of start to pull apart resistance as a thing or self-talk as a thing versus the person themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start to find the data out. Like, what is this voice actually saying? Can we write this down? Okay, you're stupid. You're going to fail. You've tried all these diets and you've failed them all. You suck, blah, 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 right? So whatever the client says, I write that down, or I somehow make them look at it or engage with it, right? I might even say it back to them, like, okay, so what I've heard from your resistance voice is you're going to fail because you fail everything. So we externalize the self-talk, first of all. You have to bring it out of the person's brain, whether that's in writing or verbally, especially if you can say it back to them in your voice rather than them hearing it in their voice. Sometimes simply being present with the external manifestation of self-talk will change people, right? So, for example, if they write it down, I like to use whiteboards or, like, some kind of text capture format, and we'll kind of stand there and, like, look at it together. And then the client will be like, wow, like, when I put it out there, that's so screwed up. I can't believe that's in my head. And they will begin to develop a desire to change it. Now, if they don't begin to develop a desire to change it, I push on it a little bit. I'm like, let me just grind my thumb right into that pain point, that trigger point that you're feeling right there. Hey, wow, what is it like to have your brain telling you that you suck so bad? So I like to kind of amplify the pain a little bit if needed. And then, you know, the client will say, God, it's terrible, it's awful. And, you know, then we'll kind of understand the emotions behind it. And then I'll let them sit with it a little bit, because we kind of need to be aware of our own pain a little bit before we're willing to change it. Now, I don't leave them there. I don't, like, leave them drowning in their in their own despair. But I make them sit in it a little bit, right? And then what will generally happen is the client will come back and say, man, you know what? Like, I don't know how to change this, but I don't think this is good. I feel like maybe I might want to try something different. Mm-hmm. And then we just go from there. But I feel like you can't, you know, one of my counseling instructors used to say, you can't leave a place you've never been, right? So on some level, you have to visit the self-talk, bring it out of their brain, capture it, record it, confront them, not confront them with it, but like, you know, let them digest it a little bit before you can change it. So don't rush to change it. Understand the job that it's doing. I mean, sometimes people will think that self-criticism is motivating. Like, if I don't tell myself I'm a sack of crap, then I won't get out of bed in the morning. Right? So you respect the job that the self-talk is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's another thing that I've been, I guess, with the over, man, my brain's not working today. With the overexposure that we have with like social media and stuff like that, you get to see a lot of different coaches give a lot of different opinions on kind of the same subjects, which is always fascinating because there'll be lots of like contradictory strategies for helping people get to where they want to go. And it seems to be that, I don't know, maybe it's just something that I think the audience should kind of be aware of is, you know, maybe not necessarily take everything that every coach says for, you know, absolute fact or the only way to do this stuff. Like, I think it will be, like, I've had this like concept of almost like a choose your own adventure. It's that adaptable coach of being able to figure out what will motivate people, but making sure that it continues to be positive while you're doing it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And not fearing the negative. I think people have a real fear of quote unquote negative emotions. And I don't really think of them that way. I think of them as more like either there's unhealthy emotions and healthy emotions. And unhealthy emotions are the emotions that keep us stuck, right? We turn inwards, we get stuck, we become sort of immobilized. So unhealthy anger is like this kind of chronic, corrosive state of always being frustrated and, you know, just simmering, right? Whereas healthy anger is like, man, this is bullshit. I'm going to change something. And you're like mobilized and you're activated and you're going to go do something. Mm-hmm. So both of those things are anger, but one is healthy and mobilizing and one is not. So I think as a coach, you have to also understand that negative, quote unquote, emotions like sadness, shame, anger, fear, all this stuff has an important purpose for human beings. And if you can become more comfortable playing in the mud a little bit with clients' difficult emotions, then you can actually slingshot clients into the positive, because it's like if you take an extra few minutes to digest things directly, they metabolize extremely quickly. Like something you can try, this is from cognitive behavioral therapy, is a complaining break. Or a worry break. It doesn't matter. Like if you're kind of a chronic complainer or a chronic worrier, you book a time, like 10 minutes or whatever, when you are just going to complain, like you're going to do nothing but complain. You're like going to give it both barrels about everything that's wrong in the world right now. And you're just going to complain solid for 10 minutes. And after that, by minute 11, you're like, oh man, I'm done. Like I'm so out of complaints right now. And the same is true with worrying. Like if you really sit down for 10, 15 minutes and be like, I'm going to worry so hard right now, it digests very, very quickly. And so if you have the power to sit with these difficult emotions and really help clients digest them and engage with them and face them, they will resolve so fast. You'll be amazed. Like letting a client digest a deep sadness for like 5 minutes, boom, 6 minutes in or 10 minutes in, whatever, they're like, okay, I've had a little cry and I'm ready to move on. But if you avoid them or deny them or try to get around them, they'll stick around forever.
A good book if you guys want to read up some more on that. I forget, it was either Nick Winkelman or Brett Bartholomew that recommended this book, I think. God, who was it? I want to say it was Brett, but I think it was the Upside to Your Downside or to Your Dark Side or something like that. God, the book's on my shelf right over there and I can't see it and I'm not going to run over there and get it. But yeah, that's a really good book that you should go check out. I liked it. We got another question from Dan Rollins. With PN Pro Coach becoming such a hit with my existing clients, I'm noticing that attracting new clientele is difficult due to the one-year curriculum. How would you dispel the doubt in cold potential clients and get them more interested in the service? By the way, Pro Coach is drastically changing my clients' lives.
Wow. Way to go, Pro Coach and Dan. So the question is around how you attract people to the one-year program. And again, this kind of circles back around to our theme of convincing people, right? Mm. The people that are ready, willing, and able to do the one-year program will do it. They'll be ready for it. They'll be like, oh man, I'm just done with the 1 week cleanse and the 16 week go beast mode kind of stuff. I'm ready for a 1 year program. So I think as a coach, you have to have some different options in your repertoire, right? You have to have, let's say, a month long program for a client where that's a good fit. You have to like just have options that you can make available to clients. And then what you'll often find is that if, let's say you have three options. One is 1 month, one is 4 months, one is the year. You might find that the client does the month and they're like, oh, that was really cool. I feel like I'm ready for a year now. Or I did 4 months and I kind of half-assed it. It was all right, but I feel like maybe I want to do that again. Or, you know, so understand that people kind of progress in different ways. And a year is a lot. And I think it's okay to have that conversation with people and say, look, man, like this is a commitment. This isn't messing around and a lot can happen in a year. And that's okay. But I think people often wonder about how to, quote unquote, sell things to clients before they do a lot of the groundwork of relationships and connecting with clients. Because what should be happening is that clients should be coming to you for the most part. Like once they know what's available, they should be coming to you and saying, I want this, because mm-hmm. you've created the desire and you've built that base of support where they're like, man, yeah, I want to hang out with Dan for a year. That would be rad. That would be so great. Right? So you've built that kind of capital. It's like an investment in an account. So that eventually a year seems like a logical choice. But if you think about the gap between like someone just walking through your door and getting them to commit to a year-long program, that gap is way too big.
Right.
So how can you progress them through the stages that they will require to buy in to a year-long program?
Well, otherwise it's like going on a first date and saying like, all right, well, we got to decide, are we going to be together for the next year?
That's right. Exactly.
That's not what you need to do.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Just buy dinner first and make it nice.
Go bowling. All right. So let's go to, I think we're actually kind of running up against the clock, but I think we're going to get all these questions in. It's from Maureen over at Achieve Fitness. I think Achieve gets a shout out every single time I do an episode now, but, Marie says, I love her. I'd love to hear advice on how to help people be more consistent with goals that they have indicated they are ready, willing, and able to do, but seem to fall short on adherence with, as well as how to steer people towards behavior goals that you think are most important while making it seem like it was their idea to start. Common trend today. Like it was their idea to start there in a non-manipulative way. I get the value of early small wins, but I also think it's important to have early small wins that show some tangible results, whether it be by looser clothes, more energy, less mindless snacking, etc.
Okay, you might have to remind me about all the question pieces here. I'm going to try to tackle these, but I'm sure I'll forget halfway through. So I'll need you to back me up on this one.
I
think the first question I think is really about goals versus execution. And so let's say for the sake of argument that you have clarified people's goals, first of all, and like made those goals relevant and meaningful and like understandable, because I think that sometimes people don't actually even understand what they want to do, right? So let's say, for example, I come to you and I say, I want to get really lean. Like I don't actually, perhaps as a beginner or whatever, have a concept of what that even is, or like, right. I want to get in shape. Like, what even is that? So I think in the beginning, we want to do the work of clarifying the goals, making the goals relevant, making them absolutely understandable. So that the person completely gets this is what the end point will look at. So that's kind of step number one, right? Step number two is getting the buy-in, right? So let's assume that you have consulted with a client, how ready, willing, and able are they for this? And they're like, oh, 10 out of 10 on everything. Okay, cool. Great. Boom. Well done. Now we come to the abyss between starting and completing, mm-hmm. in which we have the swamp of execution, right? And so there might be innumerable factors standing between your client and their goals. And you don't always even know what they are, right? You can speculate and guess, but you don't even know what they are completely. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is systematically look at all of the factors that could be involved in execution. And again, you won't know them right away, like they will emerge, but you start to knock them down one by one. Is there a skill that needs to be learned? And don't assume that a quote unquote simple skill is actually a simple skill. Like one skill might have 10 skills in it. Right. Mm-hmm. So what an elite athlete can do, pole vaulting. Pole vaulting is simple. A person just runs with a little stick and jumps. Well, there's probably some pieces to that. So start to knock the pieces down one by one. What can you do? What can you do consistently? What can you do well? What about how is your grocery shopping skill? How is your planning skill? How is your meal prep skill? How is this skill, that skill? Are there other factors that we haven't thought about? Work factors, schedule factors, you know? So you assume that it's some kind of logistical execution issue, and you just, like an engineer, go through the system piece by piece, knocking them out one by one, looking at what's working, seeing if you can do more. But you really think about it systematically, as a question of execution.
God, I get it. Yeah, this is like, I feel like this is an awesome, almost like two subjects that we're hitting on for this show. It's almost...
We always do that.
Yeah, but that's it's a good back-to-back. It's like a double feature of themes for this episode, which is really cool. But yeah, I think that's probably a good place to kind of pause for today, because we're getting up against the clock as well. But the cool thing is that Chris Scott Dixon is probably going to end up being back on the show, you know, relatively frequently. And also, you're always doing great stuff over at Precision Nutrition, and you're kind of like traveling a bunch this year for speaking engagements too, right?
Yeah. So Australia in April for Phylex, and I'll be actually doing Vegas in May for a girl event. Should be fun.
Nice. Oh, is that Girls Going Strong?
No, it's girl with, you know, the three R's kind of thing.
Sorry.
Yeah. They're doing sort of a women's strength adventure weekend kind of thing. So I'll
Badass.
Be speaking there. Yeah. That should be fun. Portugal is coming up in early March. I'll be doing a workshop on behavior change for some health practitioners. That'll be fun too. So yeah, a little bit of travel.
And you guys, in Precision Nutrition, as always, I like to do a completely an unbiased ad for PN, because again, like it's like literally been 10 years that I've been talking about Precision Nutrition, like all the way back with, you know, John Berardi coming on the show in episode like 5 or something like that. And it's just been incredible to continue to see how PN is leading the way in, you know, helping not only people with your online coaching platform, but helping coaches help coach other people as well, which is really great to see. Is there anything that you guys have coming up with PN that you want to let the audience know about?
Well, I think the Pro Coach is a big piece. We're really doubling down on it for 2017. So really focusing on making it awesome for the coaches that are using it, you know, new features, new things that people can use to make their coaching job easier. So we're putting really most of our attention into that and serving our certified people. Cause, you know, I think you implied that, yeah, we can help clients and that's great. We do it with our PN coaching programs, but ultimately we're vastly more effective if we can help coaches help other people, right? So it kind of amplifies and multiplies it. So yeah, so if you're a cert person or if you're considering certification, and we're just going to town on cool things for people who are certified. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, I can't think anymore because again, you guys, like I said, I don't have a job, so I don't have the caffeine that's required for me to talk for an hour anymore. So hopefully you guys can help going forward with any kind of caffeinated contributions. And maybe like a sponsorship through Rockstar. Maybe that's the avenue that I need to go through, or just potentially offering my services as a lab subject for the upcoming energy drinks of the future. I think either way, I'm a solutions type guy, so I'm willing to go either way. So,
well, you know, Saul Orwell did make a whole thing about getting people to send him cookies.
I know,
so
right?
This can be yours, maybe.
Yeah, what we need is a setup of low calorie to mostly artificial sweetener energy drinks that have a minimum of 150 milligrams of caffeine minimum per serving. So, or per can. That would make sense too. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be an interesting couple of weeks and months, and I hope you guys can join me on this crazy ride, which I'm sure I'll talk about more in the future. But Chris, thank you so much for taking time to hang out this morning and to talk about the incredible stuff that you do, and for helping out the audience and myself. And I guess until next time, we will do our best to stay warm now that the winter is here, and continue to stay as active as possible, and keep it positive, because right now, you know, we're talking about a lot of people losing their health insurance in our country. So it's a time to be positive and to be generous and to help out other people. So hopefully you can say what's up and check on people and see how they're doing today. Not to get political, but you know, I think that's important for people to be healthy, right?
Mm-hmm. Empathy.
There you go. We'll take care, and we'll see you next time. I got to get out of here. I need to go beg on the street for caffeine.